This is Tristan Beeman of the Wine Exchange in Santa Ana. You're listening to A First Growth in Food News, the SoCal Restaurant Show. Cheers.
And welcome back. Sadly, it is the concluding segment of the SoCal Restaurant Show, but the better news is we're going to be right back here with you with a fresh show next Saturday morning from 10 a.m. until 12 noon right here on AM 830 KLAA, the home of Angels Baseball 2024. And you can also catch us on the AM 830 Angels app. I'm Andy Harris, the executive producer and co-host of the show. Glad to have you out there. And you're definitely going to be wanting to tune in next week because we have food historian and chef George Geary back on the show. He's got a new book, and George is always a delightful guest. And it is, talking about delightful guests, it is a pleasure at this point in the show to bring back my co-host, Chef Andrew Gruhl, to his show. Chef Andrew, good morning, and as always, welcome back.
It's a great morning. Thank you so much.
You getting ready for Cinco de Mayo, Chef?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, Sunday brunch is always busy, so throw that into the mix, and it's a hand grenade of fun.
So maybe some special margaritas on the menu tomorrow.
Nothing special, just the regular.
At Calico, Chef, I think every day is special, but I do know the bar program works, so, should be a good day tomorrow. And we should mention we're enthusiastically presented each and every week by Melissa's World Variety Produce and West Coast Prime Meats. Chef Andrew, you really are a deep study in the intricacies of the restaurant business. You have a lot of experience, everything from running a food truck to very elevated fine dining, and you always seem to have your thumb on trends. And more times than not, you have a great feel for something that's going to be a trend and fade out fast, or something that will come in and actually be something that endures and businesses can be built around. And with that as background, let's first start out with, how would you explain to our listeners, Chef Andrew, what a virtual or a ghost kitchen is? And I believe those two terms are interchangeable, but I could be wrong.
No, they're interchangeable. Sorry. The ghost kitchen, virtual kitchen, was a concept where you could give a young and budding food entrepreneur an opportunity to develop their concept in a shared kitchen, typically off the beaten path. And the food would all live on a centralized app, right? The various concepts in a ghost kitchen, which could have, and these shared spaces are only a couple hundred square feet. They have a shared dishwasher. They have a shared dish room. You know, so you're kind of sharing all the costs of a commissary kitchen. And the space would then, initially, the idea was they would provide delivery drivers to deliver the food, or people could come and pick it up. So, about it, it's a way in which you could kind of all go in on a kitchen without having to foot the bill for an entire restaurant build-out, and you could kind of get your brand out there.
So to qualify this, Chef Andrew, because it kind of evolved a little bit, this was an opportunity when you were originally developing the Slapfish concept, your way of kind of proving the viability of this based on what was available at the time, because obviously, you know, funds were short, was via a food truck, because the cost of admission, if you will, was a lot more affordable than doing a build out of a restaurant. So initially, in terms of the virtual or ghost kitchen concept, was that kind of a more contemporary version of a food truck in terms of proving a concept, maybe initially building a brand, but the costs of entry were a lot less?
Yeah, 100%. You're correct, right? So if you look at it from an entrepreneur's perspective, it's always problem, solution. So the problem is that there's no way to develop a beta in the restaurant industry. Like if I was selling a phone, I could create one for maybe a few thousand dollars to show my prospective investors and sell the idea. in the restaurant industry, you know, you can't throw $500,000 to show an investor a restaurant. You need the money to build the restaurant. So, you know, enter the virtual kitchen. Maybe you can bootstrap it, show the investors that there's economies of scale, there's opportunity, there's demand, consumer uptake, and then you go from virtual kitchen to brick and mortar, the same way that applied to food trucks and brick and mortar.
Now, somehow Wall Street got involved here, Chef Andrew, and we're not going to mention any of the company names, but there were two or three companies nationally that there were just tens of millions of investor dollars that were thrown into these companies to launch these virtual kitchens all over the country. So is the concept evolved? These all depend, the weakest link, at least it seems to me, and you may have another opinion, is the delivery aspect. It's one aspect if some of these virtual kitchens are conveniently located. And at least in the greater LA area, initially, you know, there were some. I mean, Santa Monica, West LA, that if you picked up your food, you know, you're not going way out of your way. But when you put in the delivery aspect of this, the third-party delivery services, it seems to me that that's the Achilles heel of this concept. Can you kind of expand on that?
There was a storm of outside variables that led to this, right? So when virtual kitchens were initially launched, nobody knew the pandemic was coming, and delivery and third-party apps weren't necessarily, you know, the main way of getting your food. You know, enter the pandemic, everybody starts doing that. So immediately, the main kind of behemoth delivery companies became the primary avenue through which people were getting the food from the virtual kitchen. Once they started doing that, you're right, so much private equity and private money went into this. And I'm talking just, you know, filthy money that they could essentially price out any competitors. And when you're developing a small idea like this, you need a lot of the small guys to test things and, you know, ultimately fail, or some of them sell off and then slowly aggregate. But it kind of went from 0 to 60. So now you've got these spaces where they're trying to push unreasonable rents and relying primarily on the existing third-party delivery, which is Grubhub, Uber Eats, and DoorDash. So you go from this, like, initially, you know, this small kind of incubated idea into this massive expansion, and it just, they start turning people over left and right. The rents become way too high. People aren't able to financially keep up with the cost of doing business in these small spaces, so they start turning over at rapid pace. And then, ultimately, when you're only being marketed through these third-party delivery apps, it's in their best interest to only market the big guys, McDonald's, the Drop-in-the-Box, and the small guys get lost in the shuffle because of the costs of promoting the small guys are much higher for the big private equity-run apps. And that's what ended up happening.
Chef Andrew, we need to hold it there, but we're going to pick up the conversation next week because we want to talk about baseball bites. So hold that thought. Food fans, that's our show. Tip of the toque to my co-host, Chef Andrew Gruhl. My thanks to Oscar here at Angel Stadium on Technical Excellence. Kudos also to Adam Bell on social media. We're proudly presented by Melissa's World Variety Produce and West Coast Prime Meats. Doctor in the Dugout with Alan Beyer takes the field next. Good eating and be safe.